You're listening to the Interside Radio program with me, Scooter, and we're going to go to Dylan Brody, a cut called Know Your Audience off his newest CD, Chronological Disorder, which you can get on the iTunes or the U-Tunes or whatever tunes you want. Take it away.
There's a joke structure that I hate. It's used all the time in sitcoms. Here's how it works. Forgive me, when I perform, I sweat like Rush Limbaugh coming off OxyContin. My great fear is that someday someone's going to write a review that says, Dylan Brody is eloquent and brilliant. See him in a large, well-ventilated space. For once he sweats through his cologne, he smells like an angry caribou. There's this joke structure. Here's how it works. One character says something mean-spirited and not particularly funny. Like, why don't you just shut up? And then there's a big canned laugh, even though it's not funny. And then the character to whom that character was speaking says, what did you say? And then there's another big canned laugh and possibly an ooh, as though that first character is in trouble and maybe going to the principal's office. And then that first character says something utterly innocuous that sounds vaguely the same. Like, I said, I'm going to pour another cup. And then there's a big canned laugh and a big applause break. And I hate this joke structure. Sometimes the writers become so lazy that the second line doesn't even sound like the first line. You should shut your big stupid face. What did you say? I said, I think Edward R. Murrow was the greatest journalist of the 20th century. I hate it for a couple of reasons. First of all, it's been overused. Secondly, it requires laugh trackery just to seem like a joke and not just a structure. And thirdly, even as a child when I heard this, I thought, that didn't happen. What does happen occasionally is a normal human misunderstanding. And if you are alert to it and aware of the possibility, you can manipulate reality for just a moment so that your life can take on aspects of a sitcom. I'll give you an example before I get down to the story. A friend of mine, Jerzy Jurgens, used to have a weekly poker game. His name does not matter to the story, but it's such a great name. I went to Jerzy Jurgens' home to play poker. And he had the basketball game on during the poker game. So there was the constant oceanic rush of the crowd and the drone of the color commentators. Scott used to sit to my right, and he always brought Zappa to play. To my left on this particular night was Apache, former lead guitarist for Little Caesar. And he had a guitar in his lap and a small amp. And in between his betting and his checking his cards, he would punctuate his thought process with musical phrases that went along with the Zappa. Add to all of this the constant chuckle and rush of the chips across the table, the bong being handed from person to person. I still have room to carb. Not at this particular game was Barry. Barry lived across the hall. He was an alcoholic house painter. Constantly covered in white splatter, frequently seen coming home from 7-Eleven at 8 a.m. with a 5-pack of beer in one hand, the sixth open and half empty in his left. Because you gotta have a good breakfast before you go to work. He's the guy you want at a poker game. Steady source of income, little or no self-control, no poker skills. We're playing, and Jersey's new roommate, just of 2 weeks or so, came out of his bedroom. He was a born-again judgmentalist. had been hiding from all the behavior, this den of, well, a lot of us were in showbiz, so den of non-equity. He came out, stood directly behind me across the table from Jersey, and said as quietly as seemed humanly possible, "Dennis stopped by." Now, with the basketball game and the color commentators and the bong and the chips and the Zappa and the guitar, and we were in Studio City, so the sirens and the helicopters, Jersey could not possibly hear him. So he said, "I'm sorry, what?" And the guy behind me said almost directly into my ear, but because he is a passive-aggressive douche nozzle, slightly more quietly than he had the first time, "Dennis stopped by." Jersey leaned forward and said, "I can't hear what you're saying." I had heard him very clearly, but I didn't want to be helpful. I saw an opportunity. So I said, "The dentist stopped by." He said, "The dentist stopped by. Can we play cards, please?" Jersey was baffled to hear that a dentist had stopped by. He said, "Who?" His roommate said, "You know, across the hall, always covered in paint, smells funny." I was thrilled. Not only had he been speaking inaudibly, he had been speaking misinformation inaudibly. He had the name wrong. And I saw the look of terror in Jersey's eyes, the tensing of his cheeks as he put the pieces together and realized what he was learning and said, "Barry's a dentist?" And for just one moment, I had created the perfect cluster dangle of conversational confusion, and I lived in a perfect world. Now, my former manager had a great holiday party. And let me say, he was a wonderful manager for quite some time. And then I walked into his office and heard him saying on the phone, "No, you should book Dylan. He's very funny." Well, not in a ha-ha kind of way. But he threw this excellent holiday time party every year. And my wife and I went every year. And last year, I found myself in a conversational circle with my wife and this pompous know-it-all who hijacked the conversation and was loud and irritating about it. Now, first of all, I found this annoying because if there is a pompous know-it-all hijacking a conversation, clearly it should be me. This man was usurping my rightful position. Secondly, he was loud and irritating about it, which is just marginally less annoying to me than if he had been graceful and entertaining. Thank you two for understanding that. He was one of those people who frequently just blurts out things that he heard on talk radio as though they make sense and he thought of them. He said, "Taxpayers shouldn't have to cover state workers' salaries and pensions. That's called double dipping. Duh." "We could fix the whole economy if it weren't for these greedy teachers and single moms." He frequently put, "I'm just saying" at the end of these statements, which is conversational code for, "I don't actually wish to have a dialogue or a discussion. I just wish you to hear what I have to say and then go on without challenging my thoughts in any way." Finally, he said, "You know, if we didn't have unions, Maybe corporations wouldn't have to look overseas for cheap labor. I'm just saying. At that point, I couldn't take it anymore. And I said, do you even hear what you're just saying? He put up his hands as though he was surrendering and said, don't yell at me. I'm just playing devil's advocate. I said, the devil doesn't need an advocate. He's the devil. He said, what? I said, once you acknowledge that you are advocating the point of view of Beelzebub, you give up the right to claim the moral high ground. And I have to interrupt myself here to say this. I recently heard Newt Gingrich, and I agree, Oi. On the off chance that he gets the nomination, anytime anyone mentions him to you in a positive light, point out to that person that his name is an anagram of Twinge Grinch. And then no one can take him seriously anymore. Which is exactly how it should be. But I recently heard him say that Obama is a Robin Hood socialist. How far off the path of decency do you have to wander to read the Robin Hood legend and identify with the sheriff? In any case, it was clear that this man and I were about to get into a solid argument, and my wife, ever the peacemaker, stepped in and said, sometimes it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And this man reached into his giant sack of stupid. And pulled out the oft-quoted and never funny, what's that in the road? A head? And then he raised his eyebrows and his shoulders and showed his palms to everyone around him in the conversational expressive equivalent of the club comics, am I right, ladies? I saw my opportunity in the dead silence. And I said, wait, I have a story about this. Many years ago, when I was still a road comic, before I traded in my dick jokes for insightful observations about the human condition, I had a gig on a cruise ship. And at one point, the cruise director got some kind of a stomach bug. So I was asked to fill in for her. As the tourists returned from their port au call, I was to stand at the top of the gangplank and greet them and say, welcome aboard, watch your step, so that they could step over the little lip onto the deck and walk on and go about their business. And I figured out very quickly, because I was a pompous young man, and I was quite certain that I was in entertainment, and this was the lowly job of somebody in customer service, I found a way that I could meet the requirements of this task while entertaining myself immensely. All I had to do was, instead of saying, welcome aboard, watch your step, I looked them in the eye as they came up the gangplank and said, welcome aboard, watch your step. Then they would never look down. They would make eye contact, trip over the lip, and stumble on down the deck looking back at me, trying to figure out how they got on my bad side. That's what the people I was talking to thought. They thought that was hilarious, this circle of people at my ex-manager's party. But this guy turned dark red, put two fingers in my face, and said, That's not your story. That's my story. That happened to a friend of mine, and I told you this story at this party 3 years ago. As it turns out, sometimes it is not what you say or how you say it. It is to whom you say it. And whether they said it to you first. What I said was, well, yes. And at the time I thought, that would be much funnier if it were in the first person and told with glee and delight instead of pompous anger. And he said, so what, you're saying it's okay just to steal someone else's story? And my wife, ever the peacemaker, said, I think what he's saying is that sometimes it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And he spun on her and said, what did you say? And I said, she said, she believes Edward R. Murrow was the iconic journalist of the 20th century.
Fellow humans, that was, oh, my headphones, what's wrong? Oh, there they are. Fellow humans, that was Dylan Brody from his newest CD, Chronological Disorder. It's a pretty good story. It's a great CD, so check it out. It's like on the iTunes and the U-Tunes and all that. This is just louder. Is this mic okay?
It seems to be
eating something. Well, I'll just talk louder. Okay, here we go. Well, fellow humans, the big election season is upon us, which means I'm going to avoid talking about politics as much as possible.
Yay.
Until November. This will be your break from political talk on KPFT for the next 6 months. Because now is when the last shred of substance in the political conversation disappears altogether. There's nothing left but rhetoric, sophism, and theater. Lap dances, and there's no there anymore. So we'll try to find other things to make fun of for a while. So what else is capturing the imagination of American consumer units that we can make up? Get some laughs. I don't know about you, but for me, there's nothing more humorous than eating face in the Sunshine State. I know it's been done to death. Every zombie premise and face-gnawing joke has already been beaten to death. But I don't care. I'm going to take a bite out of this low-hanging snoot. It's too delicious to ignore. Now, for those of you who have been vacationing on the moon or don't have a television set, I'll briefly touch on the highlights of this important news story. Last week in Miami, some guy named Rudy was walking down the boulevard, naked with a Bible. And he saw some wino passed out on the sidewalk, so he beat him half to death and then started eating his face. Oh. As always, some killjoy called the cops. Cop shows up and tells him, stop eating that guy's face or I'll shoot. Rudy refused to comply, and he started growling at the cop, which is consistent, because he was eating somebody's face. So if you're eating somebody's face, it's not like you're just going to stop and then have a negotiation.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you're growling, but that fits perfectly. He's not going to say, oh, wait, oh, no, hold on a second, officer. I haven't gotten to the lips yet, so could you hold off for a minute? Pass me the salt. Now, he growled. At this point, the cop makes what I consider the correct decision and open fire. which didn't deter Rudy. He kept right on munching to the end, all the way to the kill shot. Why would he pick a wino to eat his face?
They're marinated.
They're marinated. I like it. I'm here with Anne, by the way. We're talking about, yes, face eating. Seems unsanitary, though. I'd go for... No, never mind. Anyway, the reason that I wanted to talk about this news story in particular is because whenever there's somebody under the influence of drugs, big drug story out there, it doesn't matter who you're listening to. They always blow it. I mean, even the most reliable sources, they will totally blow it. So let me read some of the stuff that's been printed on this. This is complete BS. Miami man fatally shot by police after refused to stop gnawing on another influence of a new form of the 1960s hallucinatory drug LSD. A top police officer said on Wednesday. We've had at least two incidents in the past couple of months with people claiming they took a new form of LSD and complained of feeling a burning sensation that forced them to take off their clothes and led them to become very violent. I mean, some people do take their clothes off when running around on LSD. That's more of an alcohol thing for me. I don't usually strip when I'm tripping. I looked this up. Now they claim that he was under the influence of something they're calling bath salts. It's a powder being sold and called bath salts, and it's labeled not for human consumption. But actually, it's a pretty strong stimulant, which in chemically, if you look at the diagram of the molecule, is probably closer to broccoli than it is to LSD. It's not even in the ballpark. It's not even in the same family. It's a phenethylamine. And phenethylamines are like speed, ecstasy, mescaline, you know, which is in peyote. Great big family of drugs. And that's where you find all your stimulants. It's a synthetic cathinone, which is an amphetamine-like substance. And so they synthesize it. And what you do is you take them take the molecule and tweak on it here and there, and you just get all sorts of weird drugs. Now, this one, normally, fellow humans, if I were going to do a show on the effects of a drug, I would take some and then come on here later and, you know, tell you about it. Luckily, I did a little reading on this one first.
Yay!
Yes. And I went over to everybody's favorite drug chemistry website, which is Arrowhead. So I'm looking at this drug. First of all, the first problem with this drug is that it's a powder, okay? And it's supposed to be a cocaine-like thing, right? The effective dose of this is 1/100th of a gram. So can you imagine, like, pouring some powder on the mirror and trying to cut a line that's 1/100th of a gram? I mean, how easy is it to take 20 times too much, you know?
Right.
So there's a real problem there.
Not only is the bath salt drug, MDPV, unrelated to LSD chemically, it has no psychedelic properties at all. It's just a hardcore stimulant. It's the drug from hell. If you don't immediately overdose on it because there's no instructions on the package and end up in the hospital with runaway fever and cardiac catastrophe, if you dodge that bullet, the drug comes on fast, makes you feel great for about an hour, maybe two, then you crash, feel terrible, but you can't sleep for about 20 hours. Coupled with a compulsive desire to redose, like crack. But every time you redose, you're awake for another 20 hours of overstimulated depression and frantic hopelessness, fiending for more, and you don't run out because you get 50 doses for $40. Nice. Stimulants do not make you crazy, paranoid, and psychotic. They just keep you awake, in high gear. It's the sleep deprivation that brings on the hallucinations. If you're awake for 3 days on this stuff or anything, you're seeing things, hearing things, obsessing, you're dreaming on your feet, nightmares and all. Borderline rational, getting close to day four, which seems like it'd be pretty easy on this stuff. All bets are off. Anything can happen. You're full bore, random, incoherent lunatic.
Eating the flesh of the people they murdered.
You're tearing out the walls looking for microphones, taking the neighbor's car apart, and eating people's faces. So please, try this at home, if you must. Just don't try it in public. Give the rest of us a break. I don't want to end up in your Facebook.
The longest anybody had an affair with this drug was about 3 or 4 weeks before they ended up in a mental hospital. I don't usually do anti-drug rants on there because I pretty much never met one I didn't like. And
that doesn't sound worth it.
Yeah, I would stay away from this stuff.
Yeah.
I haven't done a drug chemistry show since we had the Shoguns on. But as I'm investigating it, looking into this stuff, I'm reading the story and it just keeps getting better. The girlfriend of Rudy, who was killed by police after he chewed a big chunk off another man's face, said on Wednesday she always felt safe with him and that he must have been drugged without his knowledge. So this is the good part here. Says Ivanka Bryant, who spoke at a news conference alongside Gloria Allred.
Oh, no.
Yes. So she has Gloria Allred for a lawyer. I don't know why she needs a lawyer. She didn't do anything. She just dated. And they're holding up a picture of them kissing just to prove, yes, this was indeed.
She trusted.
Indeed Rudy's girlfriend. And, of course, she's dressed to the nines, looking good. She's kind of hot, you know. A little too much makeup. She's kind of hot. And she's dressed to the nines and, showing off the bod and everything. But camera time.
Yeah.
So I found that kind of amusing. Maybe a little reality show. Life with Rudy.
Rudy and I never discussed cannibalism or voodoo. We watched Creflo Dollar Ministries every morning. We also had private Bible studies together. And Tiffany took the harm that he did, and most likely he was given a drug without his knowledge.
And what else do we have here? Oh, yeah, and then later on yesterday, another one of his girlfriends showed up for the news, but she decided to remain anonymous. Ivanka said, "Something happened out of the ordinary that day. I don't want them to be labeled the Miami zombie." Allred and Bryant declined to comment on the other woman, except to say that she definitely was not Bryant. So there we have it. All more flesh eating stories coming out in the news, I hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was one, some fella threw his intestines at a police officer.
Oh,
and there
man.
Was this other, boxer fella. He ripped some other fella's heart out.
Yep. Man, I used to get naked when MMA. I was tripping all the time.
That's normal. You've seen the Woodstock movie.
Yeah.
I know, but you're usually not carrying a Bible and eating people's faces.
Not a popular move in the metal scene, but I couldn't help it.
That's right.
Aw.
You've been listening to me, Scooter, and Ann on the Innerside Radio program. We paid Dylan Brody off his new CD, Chronological Disorder. And we'll see y'all next week.
Bye.
Bye.